Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Just asking her friend, who has more road playoff wins, Daniel Jones or Jalen Hurts? Do you know the answer to that?
The answer would be Daniel Jones, but counter to that would be who's had more Super Bowl appearances between the two.
Yeah, I thought it was very impressive on the fumble. All right, let's get to our play-by-play call of the day.
Miami shooting 60%. Vincent Butler fouled. Count it. Send him to the strike. So Butler's got 5 rebounds, 33 points, 10 assists, and a floater on the fly here for 2 more in 35 for Jimmy Butler.
Didn't he used to play for the Sixers?
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
Unfortunately, yes.
And wasn't that fumble returned for a touchdown?
Unfortunately, yes.
I'm just trying to think factually where I'm off here. Can you... Factually, where am I incorrect?
Oh, my almighty!
I'm just asking.
You're not, unfortunately.
I'm only kidding with you, because obviously Hurts is, in a relative sense, he's earned his contract. And I say that in a relative sense, because I think, you got to be sensitive to all the people out there that get up 9 to 5 every day and they're like, they're trying to, make ends meet. So that's why I always use relative sense. Mark Wogenrich understands that from SI.com. Mark, how you been?
I feel like I wandered into a, some sort of quarterback off here that I'd.
The Matt gets over emotional about like all of his teams, so I balance him out with just by saying stupid stuff. because it has the ability to make him mad. So what'd you think Saturday?
I had a lovely day. Once the rain stopped, what a miserable drive!
Yeah,
that was, and I knew it was going to be it was going to limit the crowd, which was kind of a shame. I really expected big numbers.
I didn't
really look at the weather until Friday and went, oh wow, that's going to mitigate. Yeah. I thought 75,000.
Yeah,
we're going to come. It was fun. Defenses always seem to be ahead of offenses, especially in spring, and especially when an offense is just going to run a very, very based operation. You've just got, defensive ends kind of just teeing off straight up, one-on-one against linemen. So they look better than they look better than they would, obviously, in the fall. But there's, you look through that defense, and you saw it on the field, even without a number of players who are going to be starters this fall, there's a lot of talent. Defense, depth, draft picks, this year, but in the future, real impact players this year. I mean, I just envision Manny Diaz spending his summer just kind of doing this, wizardry kind of thing, and saying, how do I put all these pieces together into just a package that might be one of the better defenses in the Big Ten, if not the country?
Yeah. Deny Dennis Sutton, of course, had a big day. And people forget he did not go through the spring practice last year because McDonough doesn't let you leave early.
Right.
And as I said early in the broadcast, I said KJ Winston, I said, when it comes to being a safety, it looks like he's out of central casting. He's all right. What did you think about those two players? And also, let's add in Chop Robinson, because Chop had a big day, too.
Every time I would look up, I'd see a quarterback running away from Denai Dennis Sutton. See him after the game, what, 6'4", 6'5", 250. Mm-hmm. And every bit of that is just sinew. I mean, this is not a bad 250 in any stretch of the imagination, and the speed and power that he has. I look across the defensive ends that they have are just, I mean, it is a really high, this is a really high octane group. And then to your point about KJ Winston, he is somebody, I think that, I believe it was Jalen Reed who had said KJ is going to be an All-American, mm-hmm. This season. And I thought, so who's he displacing then? I mean, as a safety saying another safety, in his position group is going to be an All-American, that they have some really good safeties with him. Zeki Wheely, Jalen Reed, chief among them. Chop, you absolutely know about that as well. The player one, I think the one thing that really interested me, didn't see a whole lot of him, but in speaking with Abdul Carter after the game, first of all, seeing him listed at 6'3", 249, he's a linebacker, he's a linebacker playing in a defensive end body. So I asked him, can you play defensive end? Not full time, but could he actually play that position? Because he's the same size as Adisa Isaac and Chop Robinson, and functionally Denai Dennis Sutton. And he said, I don't think my pass rush skills are second to none. So then I come back to imagine what Manny Diaz is looking for ways to deploy him. If he's coming up with some sort of package like he did last year, mm-hmm. The way they used J.R. Brown, he could do something completely different this year with Abdul Carter because of all those other guys that you mentioned.
Yeah, and of course, I don't think people talk about Curtis Jacobs enough.
Exactly, because of Curtis Jacobs, too. Because
Abdul Carter justifiably gets a lot of publicity. I think it's interesting that the O'Hara Award went to, and I think I said this last week on the show, nobody talks about Curtis Jacobs enough, uh-huh. and he just is quietly that good, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely, no doubt. And I think with the two of them, with them being able to play off each other, with Abdul, I think they're going to slide him around. I think they're going to move him and maybe use some of that kind of functional movement that they were going to maybe try with Micah Parsons, back in 2020. I think they see an opening there to deploy him in a lot of ways. And when you've got players like Curtis Jacobs with him on that field, when you've got a young linebacker talent like Tony Rojas, who clearly seems destined not to redshirt this year, but if he makes the steps, take him to get on the field, play 20, 25 snaps, and the defensive ends, the safeties, the corners, everybody else surrounding these people, and then you have a player like that and Abdul Carter that you could just kind of deploy, you have so many options and so much stuff to play with. Third down is going to be a huge problem for offenses next year if it's not third and one.
Yeah. And then there's the kids. Tamir Robinson did not play in a year, and after a couple weeks of getting his sea legs, you can see he's got them now. And then there's Tony Rojas, and I was talking to Tony yesterday. He's up to 227 now. So it was really your first extended look, Mark, at Tony. What did you think of him?
Moves really well. I mean, he got in a lot of plays, both the two of them. I remember, I think Tamir was in on, Tamir kind of got a free rush on the throw that Durala kind of underhanded or sidearm for a completion. But, he got some action. Tony just seems like he is going to be that linebacker that you're going to be able to rely on once he gets a couple of games under his belt, knows where he's supposed to be, gets all that kind of that functional experience that he's going to need, just so he knows game speed and proper location and staying within his lane, all of that sort of thing. But you sense that there's an instinct for that position there and an athleticism to go with it.
So let's we have not gotten to the offense yet, so now we have to get to it here. So between Drew and Bo, it's not between, but just your impression of watching the two of them.
It's going to be you have to take into account the fact that they ran just kind of straight ahead offense. You didn't see the tight end formations. You really saw nothing much to protect them. You said, the use of the tight end formations last year. I don't remember a ton of things like motion, stuff that they're not going to run in that situation. So they weren't really, they didn't feel protected other than the fact that they couldn't get hit. They were still, so they got, hit by a lot of pass rush. I thought, though, Drew had some moments that really kind of make you see a future in there. There's inconsistency, sure. There's youth, sure. There's a fastball that he's going to want to corral a little bit. But the touchdown pass to Omari Evans, just like the classical quarterback movements there of just staying in the pocket and looking, like scanning the field from right to left and seeing Omari and making the throw. That's everything you want to see out of a quarterback. And then I referenced the sidearm throw. The way Drew described that, and I kind of will group those two plays together in the 70-30 range that he used. He uses like this really, really descriptive example of that play that he says 70% of the time you're going, as a quarterback, you're going to be in a clean pocket and being able to go through your progression to make it throw. 30% of the time is where you're going to have to ad lib, improvise. And that's what he did there, and he's good at that.
That's right.
But he trains the 70% most of all, but he's also proud of being able to ad lib in there. And in both those instances, you saw where he has the ability to do both, that he can be a real classic mechanical quarterback who, because he plays baseball, can sidearm, throw to second base kind of thing. I saw a lot of that with him on Saturday.
Yeah, and see, Bo's like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bo changes arm angles. I see that. Of the two of them, he's the first one I really saw it for, and I feel like Drew's kind of looked at it and went, hey, you know what? I can do that too. And he's done it, and I think that really helps. The battle for the third wideout, Omari Evans obviously is a guy he's been getting those kind of reps. What did you think of him and then also Caden Saunders?
Both looked like they have the real potential. It was good to see Omari step into that role Saturday and into that and get the targets and make the most of those targets.
Yeah.
I think the same with Caden. One thing I really liked about Omari, if he's going to be a third receiver, if he's going to land that spot, he's got to learn kind of the holistic element of playing the position, which includes what you do after catching a touchdown pass. It was good that they threw the flag on him, whether or not it's a penalty. It doesn't matter whether, he was a celebration penalty. Throwing the flag at that moment was a really good learning point, for him, in that that's a great thing to teach in practice and in a spring game. That's something he's now internalized, and it's going to, I think that when he does score a touchdown next season, he's going to remember that moment. And I thought that was great. Whether James Franklin said, I want you to call penalties when you see stuff like that or not, or if it was just an organic call by the official there, I thought that was a really good moment. And those little, I think little things like that matter.
I think it was an organic call.
Okay.
And, in other words, I think James probably told me, look, you see stuff, call it, beforehand. But I think it was just an organic call by what he did. And then it became a teaching moment.
Absolutely.
In all your experience of doing this, how do you usually try to view a blue-white game and the 90 to 120 minutes that you get to see? to put it into its proper perspective.
I want to see what the coaches, and I really like the fact that the coaches are on the field. They're fun to watch.
Yeah.
When James is on the field and the other assistants are on the field, because I think they, when they get in the moment, this is not just a meaningless scrimmage to them. This is they only get 15 of these practices in the spring. They're going to maximize whatever moment they get, so they're going to react to things. So I try to. That's what I see. What are they finding important? What is James reacting to? What are the other coaches reacting to? It's little things because they're coaching the whole program in kind of segments and fragments at this point. One of the things that stuck out to me after was James reacted to the punting. The punters were just kind of punting as they would in practice, no rust, no anything like that, and he wasn't thrilled with it. I think there were six punts that averaged, the transfer. Riley Thompson had a big one, but the other two punters averaged about, 35? He brought that up. He mentioned that. And that's the kind of thing with a team that we don't think about special teams necessarily that often, but this, they're replacing a kicker, field goals, kickoffs, punts, snapper, holder, they're replacing everybody there. So yep. We're not going to think about special teams until they're in Columbus trying to kick a game-winning field goal with 4 seconds left or punting from their end zone, leading by four with 2.5 minutes left. Sure. And it goes wrong, and then we're going to think about it. James reacting to that in that moment on Saturday, and then probably all season, or all spring, rather, that resonated with me.
Yeah. Look, he puts a heavy emphasis on it in practice. I mean, the longest period of a practice I'm talking every day, is special teams. In terms of like a period that's dedicated to in terms of minutes. All right. Always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. And hopefully the trip back was a little bit better with less rain.
Very pleasant. Yeah, it was lovely going back. But glad it didn't, happily there was no 3 o'clock thunderstorm that would have just wasted the rest of the day. That worked out well.
Yeah, brutal. But I'm driving in I was driving in like 10:30, 11 o'clock, and it's pouring. I'm like, great.
Yeah, that was terrible.
You knew it was going to keep the crowd down, and you knew the potential. I was like you. I thought there'd be 70 to 75,000.
Really did,
Yep, I'm with you. Mark, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your perspective. Yep. Mark Wogenrich, SI.com. I know you were there as well. And I'm sure you have hot takes out of it.
I have a couple takes, yeah, absolutely.
You can express them.
Well, I think special teams has a lot of work to do. I don't want to... I think I'm kind of with Mark there. I'm not sounding the alarm because it's still the spring, but... that was eye-opening to see how bad some of those punts were when you don't have much happening on those plays. So I think that's a huge area of emphasis that has to be addressed, and I know it will be addressed come the fall. I will say this. I do see what you have told us about in Bo Pabriola, because really I thought early on, I thought he was winning the quote-unquote battle, even though there really is no battle in my view. But I thought he had a good start, not a great finish. But I definitely see some of the traits that you were talking about, in particular the pump fake deep ball that he threw to Amari Evans to set up a first and goal at the 3. I thought was the throw of the day, his throw of the day at least, but one of the best plays of the day. So I was encouraged by that. And there was one package with him and Singleton in the backfield, and he took it, had a big run in the read option. Whew, that could be something in a red zone or short yardage type thing. Because I don't know how you stop that. So yeah. I like number 9. I really do. I do like him a lot. But Allard clearly showed why he's going to be the guy.
Bo is a bigger version of Trace McSorley.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. I definitely see that.
Right. Like I said, I don't get too wound up. Like the only thing that when the Blue White game, that I look at is, in the end, what's the number one thing I think of? Don't get anybody hurt. After that, I've already seen enough in the other 14 practices to get a good read on where it's going. And like I said, there's some days where, I mean, there were days where the offense was, I mean, the defense, there's no question the defense had a really good spring. But it wasn't like there weren't days where the offense either wasn't even with them or didn't win the day. There were some days they won. There were some days they were even. There were some days the defense was great. Okay. But it's a long process. And those are the parts of the process, for example, that like nobody else got to see. And that's important. Just to at least give a little bit of her perspective. But that defense, there's 23, 24 guys on that defense going to play. No getting around it. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll come back more in a moment. Matt is not done whining, moaning, and complaining. The Bitterness Cafe has an extended menu, starting with a cup of gruel as an appetizer. I mean, the people that came out to me yesterday, the paternal run, they're worried about you.
I always appreciate the concern.
They're just worried. But they also feel it's good for you to get all of this off your chest. They feel like it allows you then to find some tranquility in life once you're done being angry.
As always, it is very cathartic.
We'll take a break. You're on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV, whatever it may be. They do a great job at Purdy Insurance, making sure you're fully insured, but also at the same time, doing everything they can to save you money. Pros, great people, all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online. SunburyMotors.com. We do have one final in the majors. They always start at 11 a.m. on Patriots Day on a four-game series. The Angels do salvage the final game of the series. They beat the Red Sox today, held on 5-4 to win it. Shohei Ohtani, because of a rain delay, had started the game as a pitcher, but then the rain came in and he had to... they just said, hey, look, just be the DH. You're fine. Hunter Renfro had a 3-run homer in the first. It stood up. Red Sox had a chance in the ninth inning with first and second. after knocking it, after getting a run, first and second, and Yoshida popped out the third to end it. And 5-4, the Angels win it. I believe the Princes of Spider Tack are not playing today, right?
Correct. They begin. They have an off day, and then they begin another homestand tomorrow with the the fighting Shohei Ohtanis.
Ooh, well, it'll be fun to see the best player in baseball in Yankee Stadium for the first time this season. All right. I'm sorry. Does your guy pitch?
It will be exciting. Yeah.
Does your guy have an 0.86 ERA?
No.
No. Okay.
Yeah, it'll be exciting.
That's okay. I mean, in this century, the Angels have as many world championships as the Yankees do.
Once again, unfortunately, that is correct.
It's called accuracy. But it is the 10-year anniversary, almost to the day, of the Boston Marathon bombing. And it played out on this show. You're like, holy mackerel. Be kidding. And of course, everything that played out with it, the Red Sox had played the Rays that day and they had won back and then had gone to Cleveland because the game ended early. They were already at the airport, right? And it wasn't when they got to Cleveland, they're like, what the heck happened going on here? And of course, then they delayed what was going to happen when they got back to Boston. So when they got back to Boston, they were about the only vehicle that was allowed on the road at the time. So the bus took them back to Fenway after the Cleveland series. And they had swept Cleveland. And as we all know, David Ortiz made that memorable speech before the game. And they went on to win the World Series that year as they beat the Cardinals in six games. And Ortiz had hit .688 in the World Series. But Boston wore uniforms that day specifically that said Boston on the front, not Red Sox. Right? And they were white jerseys with Boston and red across the front. All right. You know what's interesting about that? The Red Sox, they wear those uniforms every year on this particular day, and every once in a while during the season they'll wear them. Once in a great while. You know what, Matt? They have never put those jerseys up for sale. You cannot buy those jerseys through any of their official outlets because they are very, to their credit, very conscious of... Because I mean, if they wanted to put those jerseys for sale, Matt, they could sell a million of them in probably 24 hours. And they won't put them up for sale. They won't put them in the gift shop. They won't do that because they feel like, hey, look, we don't want to look like we're taking advantage of what was a tragedy. And I give them credit for being sensitive about that.
Me too.
And they wore them today, for example. And that's how it came up. They've never put them in 10 years. They have never put them up for sale. You know, whether it be in T-shirt form or in jersey form at their gift shops or anything like that. And I mean, that's how sensitive you have to be, because remember, this went for days trying to hunt these two down. And they killed Sean Collier on the MIT campus, if you recall. The young police officer was just in his car. And they had to go through the neighborhoods in Watertown and everything. It was a scary time. I remember being in Bill O'Brien's office, and Bill O'Brien says, I can't believe I'm looking at that neighborhood. He said, that's where our babysitter used to live, is in that neighborhood. I remember being in his office and telling me that. That's just how freaky it was back then. It was awful. Awful.
It's crazy. So, it's 10 years already.
It's amazing that let's do this from two perspectives. One, 10 years feels like it, like, wow, 10 years? But for anybody who was there that day, anybody who was injured that day, anybody who has loved ones or friends that were either killed or injured that day, it probably feels like 100 years.
Absolutely.
So, all right. Your guy, Jalen Hurts, gets a $255 million deal, $179 million and a half guaranteed. The 255 is the largest number in the history of the NFL. And there are a couple things. I think it's the third highest guaranteed number. I'm trying to remember now. Deshaun Watson has the highest guaranteed number. And Kyler Murray, believe it or not, has the second highest guaranteed number. And then it's Hurts. And on the per year number, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers are behind Hurts at the per number. So Hurts is one, Rodgers is two, Wilson is three, and when it comes to the guaranteed number, Watson's one, Murray is two, and Hurts is three. The only question I would like to know, and I don't know how to calculate this, so that's why I always rely on reporters who know these things. What is the cap hit on this? Now, I know the cap's going to go up. So it's not like I don't know the cap's going to go up, because the cap is going to go up as time goes. So that allows you to have more flexibility with this. But what is the cap hit? Because now it does impact your flexibility with the roster. So I'm not saying he's not worth it. That doesn't enter into this discussion. That is not the discussion about whether he's worth it or whether the contract's worth it, okay? That's not the discussion. The discussion is going to be moving forward. What will it mean to your ability to craft a roster because of what the cap hit means?
I'm just as curious.
I mean, and I'm only asking just from a logistics point of view. It's not, take my word, I'm not thinking twice about whether he's worth it or not. I mean, quarterbacks are, you know, and let's face it, the Mahomes deal now looks like a bargain next to this. It's probably why Brett did it when he did it. But that's something that moving forward, what does it mean? Somebody else has to answer that for me. I don't know. Because every article I've read has not mentioned the cap hit. In terms of what he has done, look, this guy has gone out and his efficiency has been off the charts. His ability to run just puts everybody in peril when he's on the field. And we can talk about Lincoln Riley all we want. To be honest with you, you're seeing signs of that when he was at Alabama. You saw the way he directed the game against Georgia in the SEC title game. You're like, wow, he looks like a far more polished quarterback when you looked at him in that game. Now you see him in the NFL, the accuracy, and there's no doubt who the leader is, how he conducts himself on the field, how he conducts himself off the field. He is really, to his credit, just seems on the surface to do everything right. And as for the 255, look, and it's guaranteed money. I mean, there's 179 and a half that are guaranteed. It doesn't really matter whether we think it's worth it or not. It's just what the scale is in the NFL. So that's not really the conversation. I think the legitimate question is, what's the cap hit? And if the cap hit is extensive, especially on certain years, how do the Eagles have to work around it? That's my only question with it. That's my only question with it. Let's see. Penn State basketball. Jameel Brown, as expected, announced today he's pulling his name out of the transfer portal. He is staying with Penn State basketball. So, I mean, I was around these guys on Thursday, so I pretty much had a pretty good read about what direction that was going in, which is great because I really like Jameel Brown. My quick scouting report on him is, again, you guys have not seen him play that much, so obviously this is based on practice. He has a beautiful shot. Beautiful shot. Just really like just the form, smooth, elevation, use of legs, snaps it off at the top, and he has length. Jameel's going to fit very well with what Mike wants to do, Mike Rhodes. And that is, that'll be important. So that's now three guys in the existing group of Kanye Clary, Jameel Brown, Demetrius Lee that say they're staying. Evan Mahaffey hasn't said anything yet. And I think Kebba's visiting Notre Dame today, I think, which is, that was John Rothstein reported that. But it's not like Mike has not talked with Kebba. And Kebba, by the way, was at the Blue-White game on Saturday. Kebba was at the paternal family Beaver Stadium run yesterday. I mean, so he's been there. He's been around it. And, yes, in these workouts, and you're allowed to have, I think, 4 hours a week with the players right now, Kebba and Evan have both been a part of the workouts. So if you're wondering, they have been. Football-wise, Jimmy Crist is the first one to put his name into the transfer portal. Offensive lineman. Penn State is right now, based on incoming guys that are coming here, whether it be freshmen or transfers, currently, I think the number is that they're at 87. I believe that's the current number. So you can start doing the math on that as to what has to happen here over the next 13 days. Because the transfer portal will close the afternoon of April 30th. There you go. And the thought process is maybe Penn State could use maybe another defensive tackle somewhere just to add a little bit in to go with Devon Ellis, Zane Durant, Kaziah Izzard, Jordan Vandenberg, Devon Townley's in there as well. But maybe get one more guy there, and then they have to make a decision as to what they want to do with the wide receiver spot.
Yeah, defensive tackle is what I have my eye on for the transfer portal. Because if they can, Zane Durant stood out to me on Saturday, but if they can get somebody else or two, I mean, this Penn State defensive line's already going to be hard to stop. But I mean, teams will have zero chance of slowing down the defensive line if you can get other disruptors at defensive tackle. I mean, well, good luck.
Right, and again, Kaziah Izzard will be coming back, but I think they could use another guy there. That would not hurt. And then after that, I mean, Penn State has done a great job of being smart and selective and vetting the transfer portal. And we'll take it from there. And Mike Rhodes is doing the same thing in basketball. Like keeping Jameel Brown, I'll be honest with you, just so everybody knows, I've been a big Jameel Brown guy from day one, from the time they recruited him to getting him on campus and watching him in practice. All right. And I think I even said on the broadcast this year, because Dick brought up, he says, hey, you've seen him more than anybody. He says, what do you think? And I think Jameel Brown can play. Will he be a star? No, but he's going to be a darn good college basketball player. And he'll fit in well with what Mike Rhodes wants to do. All right, we'll take a break. Come back with more in a moment. You're on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
I think we're in a good place right now, but I think we need some more depth and more competition at D-tackle. I think we need some more depth and competition at wide receiver, because I do think we could get by West Virginia or by game four or game five. I think we could have six guys that we feel good about, but it's not competitive. Besides that, we won't turn down a great player at any position.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, by the way, just a quick question. Are the Eagles going to do Dollar Dog Day? Okay, I'm just wondering.
They actually never have, and I don't think they ever will, especially now.
No, I mean, seriously, I mean, it's like, why? You worried about your fans? Seems to work all the other ballparks.
I've never seen an NFL team do that. I think that's just a baseball thing, the Dollar Dog Night theme, but yeah.
Yeah, but I've seen, like, other ballparks. It seems to work okay. People seem to, like enjoy it.
Well, it works at the Lehigh Valley Pigs games and at the Reading Fighting Phils.
Yeah, but those minor league baseball are in beautiful towns.
Yeah, but it's still the Phillies organization. So you're going to get Phillies fans, presumably, at least.
I think they're just Reading and Lehigh Valley fans.
You could be right.
You go to Dollar Dog Night at other major league ballparks, everybody seems to, like, get the hot dogs and, like, they actually eat them. They don't use them as weapons.
How logical.
Your fans scare me. All right.
We tell it like it is.
Yeah, guess what? How's that working for you? All right, free agents coming in droves. Yeah, they tell it the way it is there. I'd rather go someplace where I feel supported. All right. You guys don't have a lot of titles, do you? Have you asked yourself why?
Unfortunately, no.
You gotta take a look. Tell you right now, Hurts, big signing. Bryce Harper, big signing.
Auto repair.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.